Hi, I'm Stephanie Lemick, and this is the Building Trauma-Informed Workplace podcast. I am super excited to have one of the kindest, smartest, coolest people I know joining the podcast today, Jen Fox. Jen, welcome. I am so thrilled to have you joining me, joining our listeners for a conversation today. I'd love to give you a few minutes to go ahead and introduce yourself.
Well, I don't know if anyone, especially my kids, would introduce me as cool. So I'm going to take that and run with that as far as I possibly can. So excited to be here. I'm Jen Fox. I have spent the last 25 years inside and outside of organizations, really listening to people, facilitating learning, and building organizational culture. In the past year, I have become increasingly passionate and focused on the topic of building resilience, and that's at the personal, team, and organizational level. So I think that's what we're going to get into today. We've had a couple other conversations, and I'm really excited to do that. I will say up front that my primary identity is that of a mother. I have three children. They're 9, 11, and 14. And so all of my lessons around resilience come through those little humans, or my animals, as we discussed offline before we pressed record this morning. So I'm just looking forward to just a really, you know, human, real life conversation with you, Stephanie.
I'm so excited. And I'm so glad you're here to chat with us about resilience, because I think we really get resilience wrong a lot of the time, especially when we talk about it in the context of the workplace. I was just chatting with a group the other day about, I'm calling it toxic resilience, this idea that we are constantly have this unending well of ability to deal with stress, ability to overcome adversity, and that's not resilience. I am so thrilled to talk more about some of the work you've been doing around resilience, and I'd love, I know I've had a little bit of a sneak preview, but I'd love for you to share a little more with our listeners.
Well, I'm glad you introduced the word toxic into the space here, because let's just talk about it. It's funny. I publish on Substack weekly, and that is the introduction to my newsletter. It's combating toxic resilience. And I think one of the things that I am most proud of at this point in my career is that I can freely speak from my own experience without any concern of how people will see that. You know, people say once you approach 50, you're all out of, you know, what's to give. And maybe that's the case. So everything that I share, everything that I create really comes from my own lived experience. And so I want to set the stage for that. A year ago, I was leaving a very toxic situation. I got on a plane. I was going home to my niece's wedding, and, you know, 5-6 hour plane ride. And I created this entire model on one plane ride. It just like poured out of me so naturally. And I realized that it was just really a culmination of my you know, lived experience, past and near. It was my working with teams and organizations and companies of all sizes. It was being an individual coach and really drawing off of, you know, really the privilege that I have of being, having that sort of inside view into a lot of struggles that people face. But I wanted to do something different. And when I think about what's wrong at the level of organization, I started to go back and think about, you know, where does this show up, and why have we gotten this so wrong? And it's easy to say, well, you know, it's the pandemic, or, you know, oh, it's social unrest. There's all these things. And certainly those things have played a large role over the last couple of years. But when I started to go back and look at it, I realized that sort of the prevailing model for the last 30 years around change management, which is amazing work. But the first step in you know, the most popular model is create urgency. They're like, I don't know about you, but I think we all have enough urgency right now. I don't need anybody else to create more urgency. And I started to really think about that and think about the amount of burnout that we see in the workplace, especially at that middle manager layer, and thinking about what are we getting wrong here? So as I put together my model, or it came together almost in a almost supernatural kind of way, I realized that these things that we could do better at the level of organization, they really have to start with the individual, because ultimately a team is just made up of individual people. And so building these skills to face and lean in on and learn from and thrive through any challenge, like, that's the name of the game. I also want to share just on a personal side, because again, you know, being a mother, that if I could wave a magic wand and give my kids one thing, like one thing, it wouldn't be their ability to, you know, get straight A's in their academics or play the piano. It would absolutely be their ability to deal with whatever life brings their way. So I'm fueled by the purpose of eventually bringing this work to middle and high school students. I think it's an under-addressed, you know, population that just, especially in these times. So I'm excited to go through it with you today. I sort of pitched you an idea when you reached out and I said, hey, do you want to try it out, like in real time? Not as a concept, but actually to walk through it. And you said, I'm a little scared, but yes.
Yes. It's a yes and, you know, I'm game. And I mean, we've had so many amazing chats. It's like the trust is there. And I think it's really powerful to combine all of our experience when it comes to, you know, work experience and our lived experience. To me, I think that's a little bit of where the magic happens. I think for me with the wounded workforce, that's where the magic happened for me too. And so super excited to walk through this and give it a try. And hopefully I'm a good test subject for you.
Well, we'll see, right? We'll see what happens here. I think there's been a few. I've tested this on a lot of different things. I don't expect you're going to come up with anything that's going to throw me for a loop, but, you know, let's have at it. So, but I'll start with kind of, you know, setting the stage. Fundamentally, if you could start to think about, there's sort of two mindsets that we often get into when there's a challenge. And this can be a setback, like something happening with your dog throwing up or whatever in the morning, or it could be, you know, you're facing a performance issue or a layoff at work. I mean, just the whole gamut. And so I would invite your listeners just to like really open their mind right now, and whatever feels present to them, think about a personal challenge, a team, a workplace, whatever it is, because I think that will be most useful as we go through this conversation. So the two mindsets in general are, why is this happening to me? Oh my gosh, why does this always happen to me? And if you could just label that as sort of like the victim mindset, right? Things are happening to me, I'm at the effect of. When we're in that mindset, there are certain things at each step of the model I've created that we really want to be aware of. And they come very, very easily, because it's a very easy mindset to slip into. The mindset we want to try to reach is, why is this happening for me? And this is not like a, everything happens for a reason. You know, when you want to clock someone when you're in the middle of going through a really tough time and they say that, and you're just like, really though?
Really? That's not helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. Not helpful right now. So I'm not endorsing going out and saying that, you know, but what I am endorsing is saying, if we can get ourselves in the mindset of trying to look for, like, what are the lessons that are available for me, even if right now they're not evident. And in that mindset, there's a whole other, you know, sort of set of tools and things that we can access when we're intentional about it. So that's the first thing, right? So we're going to look at the victim mindset is a set of like beware behaviors. And the positive mindset is a set of like be behaviors, things we want to access, how we want to be. So that's the first thing. The second thing I'll say is that when you talk about toxic resilience, I think this was one of the most important things for me. And I would say that's probably the most different from how we often approach change management or resilience right now. So let's just think, okay, something happens right now, right? Something, you had an expectation, you started to do something and it didn't work. What's the first thing you do? You like usually come up with a different idea, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah. You move on. Oh. Yeah.
Right. You're like, that didn't work. Let's try that. Right.
Right.
Okay. And that can be everything from, you know, you're trying some new spending plan. Maybe you're trying some new diet. Maybe you tried a new way of communicating with your boss. It doesn't matter. But we get into this pattern of like, you know, do something, doesn't work, do something else. And we're in this constant cycle of just act, react, act, and react. And we rarely pause to actually stop and be like, whoa, what's going on? You know that, you know the Staples like easy button they have? I love like a Staples like stop or like pause. Like oh, pause.
Yes. Pause. Yeah.
Like a pause button. Should have one of those.
That is a good idea. I want a pause button. I need a pause button.
I bet I can find it on Amazon. Maybe I'll look afterward. I always talk about it, but I've literally never gone to look for it. I'm sure. So basically that's one of the first things to think about is like noticing where, when something happens, you right away jump into finding a different solution. And it's not to say that those things sometimes don't work, but I assert that they're not sustainable because they're too reactive. And so what we're doing is we're usually just taking a slightly different modified, you know, action or a little tweak to something that didn't work before. And we're missing out on all the lessons that are learned. How does this look in a team, right? Say, okay, there's a project you're working on and it's off schedule or over budget or, you know, not meeting the customer requirements or whatever. What do? We get in a room and we like triage. Let's do this. Let's try this. Let's try that. Let's try that. I mean, I'm sure everybody's been in those kind of sessions where it's like this frenetic, what can we do energy to fix it? I'm saying stop that. That's like, that has to happen, but that's like step four. That's like step four in what I'm saying. So we're going to start with step one. So my model, the Bounce Back Blueprint, it has six steps. And I'll walk you through the steps so you have the context, and then we'll start to get into these are the simple steps. The first step in everything right now, we're going to walk through it in the personal, but it could be I or we, right? So the first step is I am. The first step is I am. In a team context, that would be we are. Okay, you get the idea. Second step is I feel. I recognize. I could. I will, and I need. And I'm going to explain all of these as we get into them, but I wanted to just sort of set the stage for the, especially for the visual people. Okay, so we're going to start with the I am step. And so here's your challenge. And Stephanie, I love that you're up for just like working through this in front of people. I love it. So what I'd ask you to do is think about any kind of sort of challenge, something that's not going the way you want it to be right now. And your first challenge here is to state it without any detail. I don't want the story, just like a pure, like, I am. Here's where I'm at as it relates to this issue.
I am disorganized and time constrained.
Fabulous. Fabulous. One of the things, so if you were in the victim mindset right now, what you might notice comes up for you right away is resisting that. Little bit of denial, right? Could be like, oh, well, obviously I am time constrained right now because I'm doing all these things like right away, right? Like our mind just starts to really sort of rationalize why we're there. When you're in that positive mindset, why is this happening for me? Then what you're trying to access is being vulnerable and being really present. So you were vulnerable. You just did that. So check. You're 100%. You're off to the races.
Woo!
Now, being present with that is your next sort of challenge, right? So just saying that out loud, right? I'm disorganized and time constrained, uh-huh. Right? There's a little bit of freedom right there in just being able to label it and say it. Okay, so you already did the first step. Ready to go.
That wasn't that hard. I like that. That was good.
Painless. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now imagine for a minute you were in a team, right? And the team is having a challenge. When's the last time you were in a meeting where the team sat down and did the equivalent of that and just said, this is where we're at with no story? Doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen. Yeah. I can't remember a time.
Yeah. Yeah. It just doesn't happen. And it's usually, it could be that we haven't had the tools or sort of the structure until now. Most of the time it's that we're just the pace of everything right now is just like, you know, get back on. We got to keep going. We got to keep going. And that leads to that burnout that we talked about. Okay. Second step. I feel. Now, here's where we got to dig in a little bit. Okay. So if we're in that victim mindset, it could be very easy to start to feel overwhelmed, mm-hmm. resentful, self-deprecating. That's not the point here. Okay. What we want to be accessing is openness, courage to be able to really share, like, what is it that I'm actually feeling? a big piece of this step, which I have become really passionate about over the years, is understanding that our vocabulary around describing feelings is like this big. I think Brene Brown did a study, and I think she said most adults can just like name 3 to 5 emotions, like happy, sad, angry. There's like 2 others, right? So part of this, the benefit of this is in expanding it. Words really matter. And the more we can place the right words on the feelings that we have, the more we can actually address what those feelings are. So let me ask you, when you are really present to feeling disorganized and time constrained, what feelings come up for you?
I would say disappointed, kind of frantic, anxious, frustrated.
Yeah.
Maybe even a little sad.
Can I ask you to say those things, in particular the last one, by just saying that, like, I am sad.
I am sad. I am frustrated. Yeah, I am anxious.
Is there anything else?
I don't think so. Yeah.
Okay. So you accessed some really good words there. And I think that I'm guessing you've been thinking about this topic before. This might not be a new challenge you've been facing, which is great, because the next step is going to get into that. One of the tools that I would offer to people, if you find yourself at that, you know, happy, sad, mad, I like to use sort of the metaphor of the onion, right? That crispy thing on the outside, super obvious, and then you start to peel it. Like, what else, what else, what else? And try and dig a little bit deeper. Almost every single time, you will get to where you got to in the first step, which is like sadness, you know? And sometimes it's deeper than that. Sometimes there's shame. I mean, there's a lot of really deep feelings that are in there, but it's worth digging and finding new vocabulary to really put some words around what you're feeling. Okay, so we got that. You're doing amazing. Our third step here is one that I think is one of the most beneficial, which is I recognize. So what I'm going to invite you to do is to think about when you're feeling these feelings right now, frantic, sad, frustrated. Where do you recognize those from before? It could be when you've thought about this challenge before, but it could be in something completely unrelated to being time constrained and disorganized. So talk to me about what you recognize in those feelings. You're looking for patterns.
It's the pattern of like perfectionism, I think, showing up. It's the pattern of, you know, that I call it, you know, that icky feeling in your stomach that I can remember from being a kid. And it's those words. It's that anxious. It's that frantic. It's the I'm not meeting expectations. I'm not who I'm supposed to be. I mean, you said the word shame. And I was like, oh, I should probably should have added shame. But that's, to me, you know, what's showing up. And I felt that feeling around this specific issue, but I've also had that feeling show up in other areas throughout my life.
So not measuring up. And is that against your expectations or other people's? Is it both? Is one more present for you than the other?
I think it's both, but I think it's more other people's expectations than my own.
Okay. And I'm going to go back for a second. How do you feel when you know you're not meeting someone else's expectations?
I think it depends on the person, but mostly it is, you know, ashamed, like a failure. Sad. Again, that's sad, like anxious, uncomfortable feeling.
Yeah. So thank you for sharing this also, because I'm guessing there's a lot of people that can relate right now that are listening. So when you're thinking about that meeting other people's expectations and it brings up all of these things, how do you think that's related to being disorganized and time constrained?
I think for me, it is, I know, as you know, throughout my career, as you know, an entrepreneur, as someone who kind of has to take on all of the things in running my business and running my organization, like I'm the one that is kind of shouldering everything. And I know when I kind of intellectualize myself and entrepreneurship and my natural strengths and my natural opportunities, I am not naturally a time boxer. I'm not naturally, you know, focused in. I'm not naturally an organized, detailed person.
Okay.
But I know that people look out for the details. And I've spent a lot of time, you know, personally and professionally with very detail-focused people. And so I feel the judgment, whether it's there or not, when things aren't lining up the way they should be and things kind of slip through the cracks. And I think that's where it's when things slip through the cracks is where I'm more disappointed in myself, where I am more, I'm not meeting my own expectations. Whereas I would say just on a whole, being disorganized, you know, not managing my time as effectively as I could, I think that shows up more readily as I'm not meeting others' expectations as well.
Got it. Excellent. One of the things that you're already touching into, which is a sort of second step at this recognizer, is looking for where we recognize these patterns in our own lives. And then there's also looking to where do we recognize this in other people? Where are we looking out to say, oh, I don't measure up because I see that person, they seem to have it all together. Or, oh, I know that I'm going through this challenge and I've also seen that person do it. And both of those are so valuable. The first one, however, is we're often comparing our, you know, inner version to some other person's outer curated version of what they're going through. And I hear that in what you're sharing, right? So, okay, as an entrepreneur, I got to do all the things. It's expectation. I should be on top of this. I should be detail oriented. And I'm sure that all those other successful entrepreneurs have it all figured out.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're doing that comparison, where are you left feeling it? How are you feeling about that?
You know, I think shame comes up again. I think shame is when I get to, you know, reflecting on that, all my icky tummy feeling from childhood, I think it's shame showing up in that I should be able to kind of check all the boxes, dot all the I's, cross all the T's, even when I don't expect that of other people. It's very, it's really hypocritical. But it shows up, and I have been working on it for a long time, but when it comes to work, when it comes to, you know, building something I'm really passionate about, kind of staking my name on it, it just levels up the intensity of what are people going to think? How is it going to play out if this isn't, you know, successful? You know, oh my goodness, I need to catch up on emails, like check X, Y, and Z and do all these other things. And it just becomes a lot. And it's so different than the time I had in corporate where, yes, I still needed to do a lot of the same things, but there wasn't the same structure, supports, processes for those things that I'm not necessarily naturally good at.
Great. Fantastic. And I mean, you're touching on so many things from an entrepreneurial perspective, right? I think one of the biggest, I read the book, The E-Myth. I mean, honestly, I think it was 25 years ago. And it's that idea as entrepreneurs that we think that we should be the CEO and the CFO and the CMO and, you know, PS, the, you know, the custodian and the EA and all of the other things all at the same time. And it is a myth. It is a myth that we can or should do those things. And I think intellectually we know it. But as you're pointing out, we often hold ourselves to that standard. The other thing I want to just double click on for a moment is shame. Yeah. And I will say for myself, when I learned the difference between shame and guilt, it was really game changing for me. Shame is a belief about who we are,
yeah,
right, as a person. And guilt is usually about something that we did, the behavior that we did. Guilt is actually highly correlated to success. Mm-hmm. Shame is inversely correlated to success. So what does that look like? Well, you have a day where you didn't check your email and you missed a meeting and something was late and the dog did whatever the thing and all everything just goes off the rails, right? And you say, wow, I was not on top of my game today. My calendar, I fell off my calendar. Okay, here's what I'm going to do tomorrow. Versus, I'm never going to be able to do this entrepreneur thing. I'm not cut out for this. I can't do it. Here I go again. That latter mindset, that shameful mindset, that victim mindset, that is going to keep you in that cycle. And I'm guessing when you're in that mindset, you're not out there being your like free, powerful self.
Absolutely. I mean, it makes sense as you're saying that, you know, the definition of shame versus the definition of guilt. You describe that. And I can tell you the exact feeling. Okay, I missed on this. What can I do to move forward? How can we progress? Versus those moments that, you know, still come up where I'm like, oh, I'm never like, I should just move on. I'm never going to make this work. Like, this is, you know, hopeless. And existing in that space of shame is so demotivating. It's so counterproductive.
Yeah, it is. So what is there to do, right? There's not, I don't subscribe to like just suppressing it. I believe processing it is important and it's catching yourself, right? These are, you know, neuroplasticity. We can train our brain. We can start to interrupt those signals. It's like, no, I'm not a bad person. I just like missed a meeting. You know, whatever it is for you. So this step in the recognition, the pattern recognition can be really, really powerful because we tend to fall into the same traps over and over again. And as a team, if you think about, okay, if a team, you know, again, I keep coming back to sort of just a project because most people can relate to some type of a team project. Something's gone off the rails. It's highly likely that the core issues that are causing that result have happened before. Oh, we're not communicating effectively. We don't understand what our roles actually are. Oh, there's some hidden drama and relationship stuff going over here that nobody actually really wants to talk about. Oh, we heard rumors about a reorg and we're all actually scared we're gonna lose our jobs. How are we supposed to focus on this? Whatever it is. But if we don't take the time to stop and actually understand kind of what's going on beneath that, in your case, you're talking about stuff you recognize back to childhood, PS, that we all have, or in a team environment that it's like, hey, why do these things keep showing up? Let's like handle those. If we can handle those kind of once and for all, I mean, imagine when those things are removed from our space. So it's really powerful. And I would say that when people are working through the model, it's very common to like get to this step and then go all the way back and be like, okay, I got to go back and take a deeper cut at this. Because as you start to explore, you can see, right, things start to open up. We've gone through where you're at, right? Disorganized and time constrained. All the things you're feeling, shameful, frustrated, sad, disappointed, you're recognizing some of those inner feelings all the way back to childhood. You're recognizing those on a day-to-day, all that self-doubt. Okay, so that's where we're at right now. Only now are we going to start to think about, what could we do different? What could we do different? So again, come back to, first of all, that mindset. This is not a, why is this happening to me? How can I change this whole thing? How can I be better? It's not that. It's why is this happening for me, right? Try and get back into that mindset and think about your higher purpose. Like, why are you doing all of this in the first place? That the calendar stuff shows up as a problem, because that's really what it is. Your broader context, I understand it. Just being disorganized in the context of what you're up to is a problem. I get it. But we want to get into that mindset. So let's just talk about it. Let's explore. What are some things that you could do different?
Yeah. I mean, I have explored some of these and I'm loving this conversation because I'm starting to think of different approaches as we're doing this. So I am, you know, I've tried just about every kind of to-do list. Okay. Out there, calendaring different things. My current iteration is Asana. I'm liking it. It's working for me because it's giving me both a to-do list and a calendar. And I think that was something that was missing, like seeing dates visually and a list. So that's been helpful. Also, as we're talking, you know, I'm thinking more about my natural talents, natural tendencies. And I am an idea girl. I love ideas. I love to think of things, and I am constantly doing that. And I think part of that is showing up as I have an idea and I want to act. Like, I'm excited about my new idea. Yeah. And so I want to get it started. And I think I need to find a way to press pause on some ideas to help the other ideas I was passionate about and see them through. Because I think part of the time constraint for me is self-inflicted. And of course it is. I'm an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. I'm setting that course. So as we're thinking about this, I've been very focused on what should I do? That word should showing up again. And so I've been shoulding into, do I need an EA? Do I need better calendar management? Do I need a task list, a to-do list? And I think there's some level of help there. I think the thing I haven't tried and I think could be more helpful is, how do I find an outlet for ideas that doesn't require immediate action so I can focus in a natural way? So I still have an outlet to have ideas, but then still have a path to focus on what's important right now, what I need to finish, and then return back to those ideas. Like, as simple as it sounds, it's like I don't just have like an idea repository. It's like my idea repository is like, yeah, I'm going to start this idea right now and see how that plays out. No, like 80% of the time, not well. And I'm like, would it just help if I just had a Google Doc and was like, here's this idea, come back to it when you have a chance? And I can't believe it, but I'm like, I've never done that before.
I love this so much. When you first started talking, I was concerned that you were going, because it was so clear, right? I'm an ideas gal. Like, you just see your passion. And then when you started to say, you know, to like limit or reduce your ideas, I forget the exact word you use. And I was like, no, that's not the point. No, that's what I want to do. I love where you got to. It's like, it's a both and. How can you keep being in that space, but you've really identified that the tension is not in the idea generation, or it's not in going and delegating all the other stuff. I think what the word that comes up for me is discernment between which things require action and which things you just have to have. I also am relating so much to you on this. I mean, and I started this because I walk in the mornings and I'll listen to, you know, podcasts and audiobooks and whatever. And I just started a notes thing on my phone, and it's just literally like podcast ideas. And it will just be, oh, I gotta, you know, and I'll think I'm gonna do something with it, right? Oh, it's this episode at this time and I gotta write this. And 97% of the times I don't go back and ever look at it. And when I do, I was like, what the hell am I even talking about over here? It doesn't matter. But in the moment, I felt so inspired by it. So I think that repository is just such a great, simple solution to try. And
I'm like, oh, why haven't I done this? Because there, I've done it for other things and it's been so helpful. Like, I used to be a million tabs open kind of person. I want to read this article. I want to write a post about this article. I want to do XYZ with this article. So first of all, my computer hates it. Second of all, it's just really like chaotic and messy. Yeah. And, you know, as someone who tends to be a little chaotic and messy, unhelpful when I'm trying to focus. And I started a Word document. I was like, here's my idea document for social media posts, articles I want to read. I'm like, oh, this is great. And I do. I sometimes look back at it and I'm like, what is this? Like, this is silly. This is not helpful. But I want the information in that moment. Like, I need to do something with it. And I think it's the same thing with ideas, is I have them. I'm excited. I want to do something with them. And so I do. But then, like, I'm overcommitting by saying, oh, I want to do this idea. And it's a disservice to all of them. And just having that chance to stop and reflect, I think it's just hugely helpful to go, hey, wait. It's so much easier to do that with stuff you're not in control of. But I think trying something like this with all the things I do control, which is a lot now that I'm an entrepreneur, I'm like so excited to start doing this. Now I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna like have a
okay,
little.
Don't get ahead because you're not committing yet.
Okay, I'm sorry. I have an idea and I want to do it. See, I'm doing the thing.
Okay, so this is fabulous. And I'm going to press you to stick with this a little bit more and say, what else? So we got the idea of the document, of the idea repository. Could you
it's the walking the walk and the saying no. It's the boundary setting.
Okay.
I think too, okay, as an entrepreneur, I love and miss kind of the one-on-one helping of people. It is really hard to kind of continually like give away time and effort, especially when it's like not a reciprocal relationship. Mm-hmm. I am bad at that. So I think it's kind of revisiting my own boundaries around my time as an entrepreneur is important as well.
Okay, let me ask you. I love that. Again, I think everybody can relate to that. Can I ask you, in the boundary setting, one of the things that's been valuable to me, I'm also not a great no person except when it comes to my kids. And I know you hear all this stuff. No is a complete sentence. It's like, but have you really ever tried it? Have you ever just said no?
Just looked at someone and said no?
I said no? Right?
Exactly.
Impossible. Yes. Impossible.
It makes me want to sweat.
Exactly. Like, one of the things that I found really, really helpful, and I did this years ago, was I did sort of a values inventory for myself, and I got down to my two core values, and it was painful because, you know, you value a lot of stuff. I value family. I value, like, there's a million things. I came down to two, freedom and growth. And I think about those as I'm on this like windy road. You know, you're like on a road trip, you're on like a mountain sort of road, and they've got those guardrails that you're kind of always wondering if they would actually keep your car from falling over the cliff. Those are the metal guardrails. Those are my two things. And so anytime now when something comes up where I feel that like, oh, should I be doing this? Like, I mean, 9 times out of 10, it's like, I know I want to say no to this, but I can't.
Yeah.
When I presence those two things, the answer is so clear to me. It's so clear to me. Does this provide freedom and growth? And I will say that it's not always just for me, because a value for me is something that is important to me, but it's also a value that I want more of out in the world. So if I can see that it will provide that for someone else, I am more likely to say yes to that. But in giving of my time or my resources to that person to allow them to have that, I get it back for myself. So I would say that doing that values, when you're thinking about boundaries, I think it's a big missing piece of the conversation that we just come out with this like, oh, I'm going to say no, and I'm going to be boundary and all this other stuff. But it's like, but why? And what are we using to gauge that against? Because if we just gauge it against how much time we have or how many billable hours we want to have, it's like a very shallow thing. We want to access that deeper sort of purpose of what we're going to say yes and no to. So I'm hearing for you, your idea repository. I also heard in there sort of some systematic review of those ideas. Maybe you put that into your Asana that once a week you go back and, you know, and you look at that. I'm hearing, you know, some boundary setting and potentially some values exploration. Okay. So we've got some, you know, ideas in there, and I would really encourage, for the sake of time, I mean, if we had another hour, I would literally sit here and we would keep generating. And I think this is where you really want the lid to come off. A lot of times those first ideas that come, they're a tweaked version of something we've already tried. And it's not to say they're invalid, right? Just because something didn't work before doesn't mean it won't work now. But we really want to start to, you know, think outside the box and think about like, what else could we do? Because at this step, we're not committing to any of it. It's just an idea, and you're an idea gal. So I know you could go on and do this forever.
Oh, I could go on forever.
Yeah. Okay. But we won't, because your audience will be like, okay, I'm done my walk and I got to get home. And, you know, here we're at. So we got to wrap this up. Okay. So the next step is actually getting to I will. And this is where we're going to look for that, you know, commitment, something you're actually, you know, going to give your word to. The beware behaviors that often creep in here are self-doubt, right? It, like, I can tell you as an example. The amount of times that I said, I'm going to be a meal planner. I'm going to plan my meals. And then like in the very next second, it's like, no, you're not. So like, I stopped saying it because I know I'm not going to do it. But that initial thing given by our past track record, right? That inner voice comes up and it's like, no, you're not going to do that. So again, we want to just watch for it. You want to discount it. It's there for a reason. What we want to try and access is being inspired and feeling committed. So if you are feeling inspired and you're really present to what would be possible without this sadness and shame and all this like self negative talk around this, what's one thing you'll say, I am going to do this?
I am going to create an ideas repository and review it on a bi-weekly basis, I'll say. I'll give myself some more time.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I love the realistic piece of that there. Okay, so that was easy. Right now, mm-hmm. if you were going through this, I would really encourage sort of going through, you know, I wouldn't pick more than like one or two things, because I think that's another one of the traps we do with like resilience. We say, oh, okay, like, let's just like, we try and just change everything all at the same time. And it never works. It's overwhelming. So pick one or two small things. This feels very tangible. You have two things, but they're related. So that it feels good. So the last step, and again, I think this is something, especially in an organization, that we always overlook, and that's the I need or the we need step. So this is where we want to be thinking about self-advocacy, mm-hmm. right? We want to be confident. We want to be thinking resourceful. Like, what do we actually need to be able to do this? The beware behaviors here are like scarcity, that mindset that comes in right away, right? That I can't do this. No one's going to want to help me with this. They're never going to say yes. I'm not going to get the budget time, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So again, notice where that comes in. So you want to think about, in order for you to do this one thing, your document repository and reviewing on a biweekly basis, what do you need? And that could be what you need from yourself, you know, your systems, your process, whatever, or what do you need from other people?
I think I need that dedicated time to review, to go back. Okay. So I do know there's a commitment to those ideas that I have. And then I also think I need the support from those around me to kind of push back on the other things, the other time constraints, the, well, I have a meeting and you have a meeting. Whose meeting's more important, or things like that? That didn't just come up or anything.
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
I think that's part of it too, is, you know, I need that support of when I am able to be in the zone, because focus is, you know, momentary for me.
Yep.
When I am able to be in the zone and have that time, the support to really let me exist there.
That's amazing. And so that sounds like a conversation or two.
Yeah.
Okay. To be able to share that. If we had more time, I would separate the two things that you just said. I would say, okay, you need the scheduled time to, you know, mm-hmm. to review your ideas. Okay, you're going to put that in Asana. You're going to do that. I would encourage you then to set up some type of accountability for yourself as a, like, did you do it? Maybe that's, you know, a friend, someone, maybe it could be someone you share all the ideas you're not acting on. Like, I don't know, something to also create like some, keep that inspiration and that fun energy. You don't want to take something that is inherently amazing about you, which is capturing all of your ideas, and turn it into like a chore on your task list that becomes something that's and like the opposite of inspirational. So we would work with that a little bit more. I would then carve out something that just came up, and we would go all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah.
So around valuing my time, setting myself up for to be focused, you know, where am I at with that? And we would run right back through the whole thing, because I hear and I can mm-hmm. see that there's a whole separate, you know, set of challenges there. And that's really the work. When I think about resilience, it's like we can take those little things that might show up, right? Because you were like, why have I never tried this before? Well, I'm going to assert that it's because you've been addressing the symptom, i.e. calendar scattered, mixed, you know, missing emails, blah, 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 blah. And so you're like, I've tried every to-do list. So you're in that problem solving thing, not getting to that root cause of like, I'm an ideas person and I need an outlet for that. Then you come up with a solution that's doing that. And so when you're thinking about resilience, life is always going to have us miss meetings and emails and throw big and small curveballs at us. But if we can stop and actually start at that very first step and identify the issue, we can run through it pretty quickly to come up with a solution all the way through once we know what we're dealing with. And I think it's powerful. And I think the possibility at the team and organizational level of, instead of going through a, you know, PPK or a lessons learned or a post, whatever, Kaizen, whatever the hell they call those things, where you get in a room and they're literally like, here's all this stuff, What are we going to change? Imagine having a conversation like this where everybody in the room is being able to really talk about and feel supported to actually bring them full selves, their full selves, you know, to the problem and the different types of solutions that come up. We talk about innovation all the time, but it's like, it's innovation up here. It's not coming from, you know, from here and from a deeper place. So, so that's really what the Bounce Back Blueprint is about. It's something that you can work through yourself 10 times before 8 a.m. if that's how life's going to go today, right? Or something you can do in depth over the course of weeks with a group of people to really dig in and get all the lessons that are coming to you from a challenge. But I did, you did fantastic, I want to say. So thank you.
This was incredible. I love this. I do, like, it really does. It helped. I mean, you said it perfectly. I helped get me out of, here's the symptom, here's this problem I keep having, to really getting to the root cause. And pretty simply, you know, I was like, oh, okay, like, help take those few steps back and move past the, I was like ready to tell you my story about, I need to get my poop in a group. And it's like, no, like, let's start with this. I am. It's like, oh, I'm like ready to go. I'm feeling really excited about this.
It's so good. And I think that the story, you know, again, I usually spend time with people at that, you know, those early couple steps where we sort of put things into two circles. We say, here's what happened. Here's the facts. And then here's all the things that I've made up about it. Yeah. And the problem happens when we go like this. Right. So then it's like, even, and I almost pushed to the beginning when you're saying I'm disorganized, there's actually a bit of a story in saying I'm disorganized, right? Like, there's no facts to show that. You could say a fact would be there are papers all over my desk, or I have 162 tabs open. Those are the facts. Your story there is I am disorganized. Are you? Some people might see that that's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with that. So working really hard to kind of pull those things apart and get that emotion out of the way. You get to the emotion, right? We did that at that I feel state. It's critical. But when we collapse those two things right at the very beginning, we don't even know what we're dealing with. And we want to try and isolate, you know, what the setback or the problem is. So you did a really great job of doing that because it was like time constrained and disorganized, but then you quickly got to what those other things are. So I just want to thank you. I think it's it's honestly my biggest wish that people could have more open conversations, because I guarantee you, someone listening right now, maybe their challenge isn't their, you know, time management, but they, you know, when they hear that, they're like, oh, I mean, right away, it spurs a light bulb for someone else. And so I think through storytelling and embedding what I call this in the organization is a people-centered approach to change management. And I think when we can put the people back into it, I know you and I have talked about that in our other conversations. What else is there? The people are the ones that are doing the work. They make up the organization. And so to have it be any other way feels, you know, kind of silly. But so I would just, you know, sort of share, I love that we were able to have this conversation. And I know you'd ask sort of like, you know, what is this all, you know, how am I offering this or whatever? So the model itself, we will link to in the show notes, and there will be an individual course. So if you're kind of a go it alone kind of person, you can do that. I am launching the first cohort of the group coaching experience, which will be based exactly on that model. It'll be a 6-week, you know, sort of laser accelerated coaching experience that'll start sort of back to school in September. That's called Resilience Rising. And so that will be using the model in a very safe, small, intimate group setting that everybody is able to work through that, but over the course of weeks, not, you know, an hour, whatever we just had. And then at the level of team and organization, I partner with a company called Film Forward, and we use media, short films and short documentaries to be able to bring a very profound storytelling approach to be able to work through all of the different steps of the model. And so that is also, you can find that on my website. I'm so excited about that partnership because I love film and I love storytelling. And so it just does a really great way of accessing a different part of our brain than being sort of in the traditional sort of corporate training kind of environment. So that's where you can find it. And obviously you can reach out and find more, follow me on LinkedIn as well, because I talk about resilience all the time.
Jen, this was incredible. I got an amazing podcast conversation for our listeners. And then it's like, I got some free coaching too, and really impactful, genuinely. But I mean, this was so fantastic. And what an amazing, that group coaching sounds so phenomenal as well. So certainly, everyone go check out Jen's website. Make sure and follow Jen on LinkedIn. Both are going to be linked here in the show notes. Jen, it was so fantastic to have you on. It is always a joy to chat with you. Anything else you want to share with our audience as we wrap up?
Can I follow up with you in 2 weeks to check in on your idea repository?
Yes.
I will be doing that. That's really one of the most powerful steps you can take is taking immediate action. So I would sort of challenge you that after we get off of this and you go handle your dog and your air conditioner, create the document, put the version on your phone so you've got something, ready to go when you're mobile, and put in that right now. Put one of your first ideas. Just put an idea, right? Just get it started right away. And then put that dedicated time in, 2 weeks from now when you're going to start that recurring time. And, I think the big piece is asking for, I really, really loathe the sort of term, holding people accountable, because I feel this visual of holding someone, choking them, holding them accountable. Rather, I like to think about creating a culture of accountability, or creating and seeing yourself as an accountable person. And sometimes we need support to do that. And so it might look like, hey, best friend, I'm trying this new thing, can you check in on me, whatever. I mean, the people you can go to in your life who are going to be calling for you to be your best self, your higher purpose. And so having that sort of check-in while we're building the habits is super helpful as well. So I will do that for you. Amazing. Thank you for that.
I appreciate it. That's perfect. The work you're doing is so incredible. So excited to see it continue to grow and evolve. Make sure, follow Jen, check out her work. And until next time, be well. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.